Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the 49ers Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area.com. Introducing your host, San Francisco 49ers Insider, Matt Maiocco.
The 49ers are expected to have more than $100 million in salary cap room this offseason, and they have a lot of things to get accomplished. The 49ers will try to reach a long-term deal with quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo. If they're not successful by March 6, they will place a franchise tag on him. To discuss that and other 49ers salary cap matters, we turn to former NFL agent Joel Corey, whose insights can be found on CBSSports.com. Here's my conversation with Joel Corey. Well, Joel, thank you very much for joining me on the 49ers Insider Podcast.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Now, I know you've never actually negotiated a contract specifically with Prague Marate or with Brian Hampton, who's the 49ers Director of Football Administration and Analytics, but do you have some kind of impression about those guys and how it relates to, you know, their dealings with agents typically and maybe how they create the salary structure for the 49ers?
Oh, yeah, from a contract negotiating standpoint and cap management, those guys are excellent. You never see the 49ers really with deals where you have a ton of dead money. They're always pretty much in a team-friendly manner where they've got these per-game roster bonuses where you have to be active to get paid, and you don't have a ton of signing bonus money like in the Kaepernick deal. You did see them going away from not having money fully guaranteed in the second year a little bit this past year with Pierre Garçon and Brian Hoyer. But in terms of managing the cap and structuring contracts, those guys are about as good as it gets.
Well, before we get to Jimmy Garoppolo, we have plenty to talk about with him. On Friday night, Reuben Foster, 49ers rookie linebacker, I guess he's not a rookie anymore, he just finished his rookie season, but during an encounter with police, according to Tuscaloosa police, officers found probable cause to arrest him for unlawful possession of marijuana in the second degree. And you were the first to point out, Joel's a must-follow on Twitter, at Corey, C-O-R-R-Y, Joel, J-O-E-L. So you pointed out that this pretty much means that there are a very good chance that a lot of those salary guarantees, second, third, and fourth year of his contract will be no longer guaranteed. Is that accurate?
Yeah, the thing is that typically in veteran contracts, you must be suspended, unless you're in Buffalo, Marshall Darius, in order to have contract guarantees void. What we've seen in rookie deals is they've extended that to being fined as well. Like Ezekiel Elliott's, a guy who was drafted much higher than Foster, his guarantees voided on a fine as well. So I had someone check to see what the actual guarantee language was, and a fine voids the guarantees. What that means is you didn't get the money no matter what anymore, but you can still make the same money that's in the contract on a non-guaranteed basis, but you don't have the same security that you had before. So if his rookie year turns out to be an anomaly or off the field issues end up being problematic, it gives the 49ers more latitude to either ask him for a pay cut or to release him.
Right. So it makes it easier to release him. Now the 49ers, that, you know, they love the guy and they knew what they were getting into. You know, this was coming off a combine where he admitted that he received word, and this is, you know, confidential, but he went out public with it that he tested for a diluted sample, which is considered a positive test under NFL rules. Do you think that that's the reason that the 49ers had this inserted in, that all it would take would be a fine for him to void his guarantees?
I'm sure that factored into it, but also you've seen teams stick more stuff into draft pick contracts than they will veteran contracts. So in order to be sure, and I don't know, it would have to see what's in Solomon Thomas's guarantee avoiding language to make a definitive determination. But when you go to the combine, you know you're going to get tested. So that's like an idiot test, that if you can't pass that test by not having something come up with your urine sample, that's on you. And he's not the first person to do that. But still, there's a reason that he was a top 10 talent and almost wasn't drafted in the first round.
Yeah. Now, he says that he was sick, dehydrated, food poisoning, couldn't keep food down, and in order to keep up his weight, he drank a lot of water and Gatorade. We'll just kind of leave it at that. But
and the dog ate my homework.
And the now, so that would, we can assume then that he is into stage two.
Yeah, I'm assuming that he did not, after the 90 days, get removed from stage one like he wasn't. There's a small chance that happens, but once they start testing you 10 times up to 10 times a month, and when they start talking to you, if they find something they don't like, you're basically in stage two. And it takes a while to get suspended. You have to work to get suspended under the substance abuse policy. It's not strict liability like the PED or performance enhancing drug policy, where first time offense means a 4-game suspension. It's graduated discipline. So you got to be like 3-4 missteps to get to suspension stage.
Right. And as I understand it, the first positive test in stage two is basically a 2-game fine, 2/17 of the salary. And then the next offense would be a 4-game suspension. As I read that in the NFL policy on substances of abuse. So there is a little bit more leeway when it comes to marijuana.
Yeah, but he's got another thing to worry about, that with the arrest, that could end up triggering a personal conduct policy suspension at some point in time. Because typically, yeah, if something like that happened, Goodell's going to ding you at least a game, and then you're probably going to get fined as well. So if it isn't going to be the drug policy, it's probably going to be the personal conduct policy, which affects the guarantees.
All right, Joel, well, let's move on to what everybody wants to talk about, and that's Jimmy Garoppolo's contract. So if the 49ers fail to reach a long-term extension with him by March 6th, they will unquestionably tag him at the franchise number. And what is that salary, or what do you project that salary to be for 2018?
Well, it's now a percentage of the salary cap as opposed to just the average of the top five salaries from the previous year. So if you get the high end of projections of 178.1 is a 2018 cap, we're talking 23.307 million would be the non-exclusive number.
So then can we assume that that's where Don Yee, Jimmy Garoppolo's agent, kind of sees the floor on these negotiations?
Typically what you do as an agent, if you're going to get a franchise tag, is you start playing, okay, if you franchise me again, that'd be a 20% raise. And then you start averaging those two numbers together. And then you're talking like over 25.5 is an average when you start playing the franchise tag game. One thing I think the Niners have learned from is you never want to do, from a team standpoint, what the 49ers have done with Kirk Cousins, because that's a blueprint of how not to sign a quarterback. Let's say the 49ers, let's just say the Redskins.
Yes, you did.
Yes, the Redskins. Yes. Well, that's because everyone just assumed Cousins was going to be in San Francisco at some point. So no, I still question. Haven't gotten to the point where he's not the San Francisco quarterback.
It took us a while, yeah. Too, believe me. Yeah, so you don't want to just play that game of these one-year franchise tags, because
no, because once he has $23 million in his pocket, he's made basically 3-2 through, or I mean, about 3-5, I should say, and it's on his 4-year rookie contract. Well, you going from 3-5, then you've got 23 and some change as well. Yeah, you can play harder ball. The Niners have to be very encouraged. Look great in the limited time you started, but it is only limited time. So I would be hesitant off of such a small sample size to pay Jimmy Garoppolo like Derek Carr, but it would not surprise me if that's what happens. And Carr's deal averages $25 million a year, $70 million overall guarantees, and $40 million fully guaranteed at signing. And he consciously left money on the table so they could sign Gabe Jackson and probably Khalil Mack this offseason.
Jimmy Garoppolo might be saying, hey, I want to bet on myself. You know, I don't – why sign a deal that I think would be outdated a year from now?
Well, that's the nature of the beast with the quarterback market. If you sign a long-term deal, today's deal is outdated tomorrow because Matthew Stafford, right now, highest paid player in the league, won't be by the time the 2018 regular season rolls around. His agent, Tom Condon, represents Matt Ryan, who's in a contract year. That's Ryan's floor. Aaron Rodgers is probably going to get a new deal. He'll trump everybody. And if Cousins signs a long-term deal, he's going to be above Stafford as well. So that's just kind of the nature of the beast.
So then what? How would you expect this to play out? Would you expect Jimmy to not feel a great sense of urgency to enter into a long-term deal and see how some of these other deals shake out before he decides what he wants from a long-term contract with the 49ers?
One, it kind of depends on how aggressive the 49ers are initially. If they come out with something strong, then that is probably going to make him more receptive to doing something sooner rather than later, even though I find it hard that he's going to hard to believe he'll do a deal before March 6th, the designation deadline for being a franchise or transition player, just to see. Your best deal normally comes when a deadline is approaching, generally in any negotiation in the NFL, because teams tend to drag their feet and aren't compelled to do something unless there's a clock on it. As a franchise player, you got that. It'll be July 16th because July 15th falls on a weekend deadline to do a long-term deal. There'll be a lot of – there could be Rodgers' deal done, Ryan's deal done, Cousins, depending upon what happens with his status. You'll know either very quickly or he's going to be in that same boat waiting for the deadline. What I would do if I'm the Niners, I would be reluctant to do the long-term deal just because what if he isn't as good as he's been? Then you've got a problem. I would try to go and explore as an alternative as well the three-year approach that Mike McCartney proposed for Cousins, first time in his franchise. From my understanding is he put out there basically $57-58 million over 3 years, which would run through 2018, which the Redskins dismissed out of hand. And it would have saved them a lot of money in the long run to do that. And they'd at least have a quarterback through 2018. That way you've kind of gotten security if you're Garoppolo. Because I'm assuming if you adjust the cap forward, you're talking like Joe, it'd be like a Joe Flacco extension, literally those numbers, $66-67 million over 3 years, where you've guaranteed 2/3 of it upon signing, basically. So if all fails, you're locked into him really for 2 years. And if he's someone that plays well, you're going to want to extend him going into the third year. So it might be a way for both parties to kind of test the waters and make sure everything is what it is. That way Garoppolo reaps the benefit of the market continuing to explode at the quarterback position if he is the real deal. So it might be something for both sides to look at.
Here are two things that I think reasons for the 49ers to get this done sooner than later. And one of them is that Jimmy Garoppolo, when he came to this organization and stepped on the field, he just really captivated the locker room, the fan base, everybody in that organization. And the level of excitement just went through the roof with him out there, showing his importance to the organization. Also, the 49ers have so much cap room that I think, you know, this is an organization that has been accused of being cheap in the past. If they try to play hardball with them or try to strike a team-friendly deal or try to, you know, get every penny out of this or avoid paying any penny out of this contract, I think it could potentially just kind of leave a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. Do you think that factors into it as well?
Yeah, the interesting thing is the 49ers are more sold on Jimmy Garoppolo after a handful of games than the Washington Redskins are on Kirk Cousins after 3 years as a starter. Go figure. Yeah. But, yeah, that there's something to be said for what you're saying about them not playing hardball with him. That's going to dictate to me how receptive he's going to be potentially to – getting something done quicker, sooner rather than later. Plus, they've got so much cap room that they could front load a deal a lot easier than anybody else, which could make it more attractive to him as well. One thing I'm curious to see is the per game roster bonuses. Every player's had them. Kaepernick had $2 million worth of per game roster bonuses in his contract. Frank Gore had that amount. Patrick Willis had like $750. That means if you're active on the 46-man roster that particular game, you get paid that money. So when Kaepernick went on IR a couple of years ago, he was out $875,000 because of the per-game roster bonus amount. Even Aaron Rodgers has had per-game roster bonuses in his contract. Tom Brady has them for the last 2 years in New England. So I want to see if Don Yee plays hardball structurally and also having their guarantees in – later contract year, second, third, and fourth vest at a later date than other teams. Some teams have it vest in early to mid-February when based on the waiver period starting. Most is like third, first, fifth day of the league year. 49ers have been April 1st. So it'll be interesting to see structurally what happens there. And then there's the other dynamic, which I would not undersell or I think may not be appreciated as much as it should be. Don Yee has a reputation, no fault of his own, of doing team-friendly deals. That's because Tom Brady dictates, I want to do something good for the team, have more guys, take less money so we can improve the roster to win Super Bowls. That's not Don Yee who wants to do that. Agent works for the player, so he's executing Tom Brady's wishes, but he gets that held against him in recruiting. So this is his opportunity to erase that perception if Garoppolo allows him to do his job and gives him latitude to strike the deal that he feels is appropriate.
When the dust settles on this, what do you think the number is that the sides can agree on?
Oh, I think it's going to be something close to that Derek Carr neighborhood.
A little bit more, a little bit less?
Maybe a shade under, but I think it's going to be in that general vicinity.
Well, I know the fan base here is eagerly awaiting that day when they find out that Jimmy Garoppolo is signed up for another, say, 5 years with the 49ers because cannot be underestimated what he brought to this organization. But he's not the only guy that the 49ers have a decision to make on this offseason. One of them, Carlos Hyde, and you know, you look at the cap room they have, Le'Veon Bell, chance that he could hit the open market. What kind of market do you think there will be for Carlos Hyde?
Problem is the running back salaries have been going backwards the past couple of years. You know, you don't have one running back that's on a long-term deal making $10 million per year. I don't think Bell has a prayer of hitting the open market. They're sticking that second franchise tag on him for $14.5 million. Right now, the top of the market is Devonta Freeman. That's like $8.25 million per year, which is less than the Steven Jackson deal 10 years ago. So that tells you where – and Steven was a great player, but that tells you where running back salaries have gone.
And the salary cap is far greater than it was.
Exactly, than it was point. 10 years ago. There's an interesting dynamic you guys have because for the life of me, I still can't figure out why Kyle Juszczyk was paid over $5 million per year can barely touch the ball. I know that it was sold as he's going to be this great offensive weapon. I didn't see it all year. So right there, that's your floor. You can't pay the guy who touches the ball 300 times more than the guy who pays the guy who touches the ball 40 times less as a receiver. But and that's fullback to running back. So I think at a minimum, you're probably going to have to get in that Chris Ivory, Lamar Miller neighborhood, adjusting that for cap increases, which is going to put you $7 to $7.5 million per year if you want Carlos Hyde to sign long-term. But if you come in if a first offer, which is below where Usyk is, if I'm the agent, I'm like, we got nothing to discuss.
It also kind of, I mean, the Shanahan system, the Shanahan theory with Mike and, you know, Kyle, certainly with Mike, you don't spend on a running back, and you take running backs later in the draft. You can find guys, you can put running backs together. So it's hard to believe that they're going to spend a big chunk of change on a running back when it looks like there are going to be a lot of running backs to be had in the draft as well.
Yeah, you can find running backs anywhere in the draft, and you hit on something right there, because I remember a long time ago, Clinton Portis was very productive, and he got traded through Redskins for Champ Bailey. Yeah, well, I remember playing fantasy football back then when Terrell Davis went down. I picked up Alandis Gary, who was a pretty good replacement for those purposes. And then you had Mike Anderson come in. So they found backs who could be productive even after Terrell Davis, before Portis, and even after Portis. So, yeah, if the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, they're not going to pay Carlos Hyde.
Yeah. I want to also talk to you, just about the safety position. Jimmy Ward on that fifth-year option, scheduled to make $8.5 million. Eric Reed just played on the fifth-year option at $5.7 million. You know, I think Reed will hit the open market, and, you know, the 49ers already have Jaquaski Tartt and Adrian Colbert. What do you see? I mean, do you think the 49ers have to do anything with Jimmy Ward's contract at 8.5? And what do you think the market will be for Eric Reed?
Well, you got over $100 million cap room. You can carry an $8.5 million fifth-year option with no sweat. The one thing I'm curious about with Eric Reed, is he going to be penalized because of his association with Colin Kaepernick? He's not. I think there are going to be some teams which automatically rule him out because of that. This year didn't help him from the standpoint that he became a hybrid linebacker, which wasn't really what he thought he was going to do when he's really a safety by trade. I see him trying to go someplace to be a safety. Last year, you had that market for the most part between $6 and $6.5 million per year, $10 to $15 million guarantees. I'm talking Micah Hyde, who's been a great value for Buffalo. Barry Church for Jacksonville was in that range as well. And also Jonathan Cyprian going to Tennessee. I would be surprised if he could get Tony Jefferson money, which is like $8.5 million a year of $19-20 million fully guaranteed at signing.
All right, Joel. Hey, I really appreciate your time. And just when you look at this and you know the amount of money the 49ers have on the cap, do you expect them to come out and spend a lot of money and bring in some people like what Jacksonville did, or what is, you know, seem to turn some teams' fortunes around in the NFL in recent years?
Yeah, you don't necessarily want to win free agency for the most part. Historically, it doesn't work. But the past 2 years, you've seen teams which have really benefited from that. The Giants had a great turnaround in 2016 by spending a bunch of money on defense for Damon Harrison, Olivier Vernon, and Janoris Jenkins. Didn't sustain itself this year. Jacksonville have been big spenders for years, so I guess a broken clock is right twice a day applied to them, because they finally got it right. They don't have a top five pick, finally. And A.J. Bouye, Calais Campbell, Barry Church, great additions. The Niners be in a position, if they want to spend a ton of money, they can go out and get anybody they want at any position. If you want to upgrade the offensive line, and Andrew Norwell isn't franchised, I don't expect him to be, you probably have to make him the highest paid guard in football to do that. If you want to go out and get a cornerback, you could weaken a division rival by stealing Tremaine Johnson. He's not getting franchised for a third time, because that's going to be like $24 million, because the way that the tag increase works. Malcolm Butler hasn't played his best football this year, but he'll be one of the better corners still available as well.
Well, Joel, thank you very much for helping us navigate this whole situation with the 49ers salary cap, with the Jimmy Garoppolo situation, and we'll be reading all your stuff at CBS Sports.
Appreciate it very much. Thanks for having me.
We'll wrap up this 49ers Insider podcast with a couple of questions that were posed to us on Twitter. First one coming from Eric Roth, and he asked, outside of offensive line, where else might we see a heavy dose of activity in the 49ers personnel? And he also asked if Zane Beatles will stay around for depth. I think the 49ers will try to improve their depth across the board, and especially offensive line. So I don't think that Zane Beatles probably fits into their picture. He was a versatile guy in the past two seasons, playing a lot of different positions. But I just think the 49ers will probably want to get younger and stouter at some of those spots. So Erica asked about outside of offensive line, but I will mention or reiterate what Joel Corey said about upgrading at the guard position. Andrew Norwell will be a free agent. Or at least he's scheduled to be a free agent. He's a four-year veteran from Ohio State, where he entered the NFL as an undrafted rookie, all-pro left guard this past season. To get him, it's going to cost a lot of money. Probably will be the highest paid guard in all of football. So 49ers have the cap room. Let's see if they want to go wading in to those sweepstakes for Andrew Norwell from the Carolina Panthers. And Derek Fritz asked this question. A little bit of news on Monday as the 49ers lost a linebackers coach, the assistant head coach in charge of defense and inside linebackers coach Ken Norton Jr. He was with the team for about a week, and then he took a job as the defensive coordinator of the Seattle Seahawks. And so Derek Fritz asked this question, did Ken not see this coming down the pipeline? As much as I respect Kyle's statement, and I'll read that statement shortly, how do you commit to a team you used to play for and only to turn around and take the rival's defensive coordinator position? Well, I don't think that Ken Norton saw this coming. He was in the NBC Sports Bay Area studios last week and talked a lot about his relationship with Robert Saleh. I posted a story on that. He talked about mentoring Reuben Foster. So, you know, as far as last week goes, I think it probably came up pretty late in the week that he had the opportunity to be a defensive coordinator again after being a defensive coordinator with the Raiders for 2.5 seasons, getting fired. Now he joins, or I should say rejoins, Pete Carroll's staff. But what Kyle Shanahan had to say about this in a statement on Monday, he said, last week, Ken was presented with an opportunity to once again coordinate a defense. Because of how we feel about Ken as a coach, we understand and respect his desire to pursue the position. The 49ers did not have to grant him permission, but I think it says a lot about Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch that they, at least the precedent has been set that they're not going to stand in the way of some of their position coaches having an opportunity to get a promotion by going to another team to be a coordinator. So I don't know, as of taping of this podcast, if the 49ers are going to try to find someone else for their staff or if they're going to keep Johnny Holland as the inside linebackers coach like he was last season. So all of that is to be determined. And once again, thanks to former NFL agent Joel Corey for joining us this week. And a reminder that wherever you get your podcast, you can subscribe to this, the 49ers Insider Podcast, right here on NBC Sports Bay Area.
The 49ers Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area.com.